In the twisting catacombs and ruins of the Necromunda Underhive, there are those who use their skills and knowledge navigating the tunnels to earn their living guiding gangs through peril to new opportunities. So grab your ammo and your respirator and join us on The Dome Runners. Hello again, and welcome to another episode of The Dome Runners. I am your host, Crimson Oracle. I also go by Ian. And this episode is part two of our review of House Goliath and their play in the game and in the background. This episode will focus largely on Goliath on the tabletop. But before we get to that, I wanted to take another opportunity to mention the short story contest that I announced in the last episode. I am taking submissions for short stories up to about 2,000 words that deal with House Orlok. The winner of the contest will have their story included in the House Orlok episode of The Dome Runners, and potential runners-up will be selected for future anthology episodes where I will be doing whole episodes of short fiction. So I appreciate everyone who has submitted so far, and I love to see those submissions. So if anyone has any story ideas kicking around, don't be afraid to put them to paper. Even if you aren't the best of the bunch, you may still get your story read on the show. So send them along. You can send them to thedomerunners@gmail.com, and I'll include links in the show notes. And don't forget to use the subject short story contest in your email. Thank you. With that, we'll move on to my interview with Tom Carter about House Goliath on the Tabletop. And on to the meat of the episode. Here with me to discuss House Goliath on the Tabletop is Tom Carter. Tom, why don't you introduce yourself?
Hi, everyone. My name's Tom, as I've said. I used to be part of the Chronicles from the Underhive podcast in the UK. We were doing it for about 2 years since 2017, basically, when it came out for the second time.
Definitely you guys calling it quits was one of the things that made me go, well, we need another Necromunda podcast.
Yeah, I'm really glad because there was, thankfully, I think two or three have come now.
Yep.
in our replacement, which is cool because I know the couple of the guys doing the Sump City one were really good, prominent members of our group. And I know that when we were trying to work out whether we were going to close or carry it on, but maybe swap a couple of the people out who couldn't commit anymore because of work, the two of those people were actually ones who started Sump City Radio. So, and it's a two-man guest now. So it's just like, oh, perfect. Okay, well, then you just take over then. That's fine.
Yep.
So it was really good timing. But it was just too difficult to get everyone to be there every month, and
it's always when you're dealing with a group of people, you're always going to have logistics problems. That's definitely something I thought about when I decided to make myself like a single host and then do every episode just bring people on to talk, because I was I can coordinate my schedule, but having to manage four people's schedule, suddenly that becomes a problem. Even though I enjoy, I feel like the show needs Yes, and I'm, you know, now of course I'm getting very meta about this whole thing in the middle of an episode, but whatever. I think the show needs other voices in order to work. So I want to bring other people on, but I definitely want to be in control of the schedule without having to factor in, you know, the chaos of having, you know, the same co-host every episode.
Yeah, but thankfully I didn't have to do the editing, so that was why I was able to carry on for 2 years rather than give up after about 6 months.
It's definitely the least rewarding part of the experience of making a podcast, but it actually is the most important when you actually are, you know, on the receiving end of the thing.
Yeah, 100%.
One of the funny things that, yeah, and of course I continue to digress, but one of the funny things about the whole COVID lockdown situation is that a bunch of the podcasts that I listen to that are usually recorded in professional recording studios are now being recorded in people's closets. And suddenly you're hearing these pros deal with the same sort of basic mundane tech problems that the rest of us garage podcasters have been dealing with for years. And it's kind of funny, like, hear like Ezra Klein popping all over the place because he's, you know, not being conscious of his peas or whatever.
Or how close they are to the microphone, or if they turn their back for a second and then it cuts out.
Exactly, bumping the table, all the things.
I'm really trying to be I've got a squeaky chair and I'm being really conscious to sit as still as I possibly can.
It's a challenge. My desk chair is not so good either. I guess we should move on to talking about House Goliath.
We at Yellow Claw MSEC work hard to deliver smooth taste and high alcohol content. We use the highest quality synthetic ingredients available, so you can get virtually the same taste as a high-end brand at a fraction of a cost. 99% similar to the leading brand. Whether it's your birthday, a wedding, or just a way to cap off a good day, Yellow Claw MSEC is here. It tastes like intoxication.
What initially interested you in House Goliath?
Well, in the newest version, because in the old version, I never was interested in the Goliath really at all. I never did that gang. But in the newest one, I watched Mad Max Fury Road and also the Primaris Reaver heads. Normally when I do a whole gang, it's because one model has caught my eye that I think I could build, and then I just go from there.
Right.
So I wanted to make that a Morton Joe model with the skull, Reaver face, cable stuff some, make the mask, do the hair, and then I've gotten a Morton Joe model. Oh, well, what do I do from that? Well, I'll then carry on making the rest of the guys.
Right, you need some Smegma Mad War Boys or whatever.
That's right. I need the family. I've got to have the actual War Boys themselves, which were the Goliaths. So it basically came just from a conversion idea to start with. But I do love those models too. I like the fact that there's so many different things you can mix them with and bits and pieces.
Yeah, I got to say, I'm really impressed with the variety of different sculpts I've seen people bring into the Goliath fold. Like any kind of big bulky model, it seems like, winds up becoming a Goliath, and every time I'm like, wow, that is an inspired choice. Like they just really are, like, there's so many oversized hulking muscular guys in the GW lines that there's a lot of opportunities there.
It's a lot. I think Escher kind of with the female bits and pieces, but it's definitely one of those lines where it's like, even with third party companies, there is a 28mm big muscly guy. Well, he can certainly be used as a Goliath.
Yep.
And it just depends on their level of armor as to what point you're going to put them in at in your gang, whether they've got no armor at all and they're a bully or whatever from there.
So how would you characterize your preferred play style with the Goliath?
I would generally try and shorten the gap as soon as possible.
Right.
Even if it is to get your combat shotgun and or your stub cannon or anything like that into range, it would my is definitely trying to throw a couple of smoke grenades, getting as close as humanly possible, but not just rely on melee. Because my original gangs, my original Goliaths did just were very melee focused.
Right.
And it would get pinned out or shot apart, and they wouldn't run away, but they then also wouldn't really do much because you couldn't get into combat, because once they were pinned, you can't charge that next turn. You just right. get up and that's it. Sort of thing, you shoot or whatever, but that's it. So it's about trying to get into that dangerous area.
Yeah, I definitely find that running close combat gangs, even the tough ones, it's still a lot of finesse. You definitely have to be thinking about setting up. You have to be thinking a few turns ahead, setting up your charges, you know, setting up screens so that you have your bullies getting charged instead of having, you know, your big badass getting, you know, cut to pieces by a by one of the corpse grinders or whatever.
Oh, corpse grinders.
Just everything that Goliath is good at, just taking it to an 11 with those guys, other than shooting, because you can actually do decent shooting with, you know, bolters and such.
Yeah, especially with some of these upgrades and bits and pieces that you can do now as well.
Yeah, that too. So are there any things that you avoid when you're starting a Goliath gang?
Like I said, I'll try and reduce the fact that it's not just a close combat army. I'll try not to just... Because I know that I used to have a guy with the... I know it came with it, but the Spudjacker and the Brute Cleaver.
Right.
And bits and pieces. I'll try and avoid it where they're just combat focused, because you don't have anything to kind of fight back with in the future. But also, I try and avoid, especially with this new book, is to overpower... certain models, because you can quite easily make your leader 500 credits.
Right, and suddenly you're really at a disadvantage for a good chunk of the campaign as you try to catch up on, you know, the guys who are able to throw 12 bodies at you.
But then you've got the opportunity. I think it's about the and obviously I don't know what you can and can't say on the podcast in regards to don't be an idiot, I'll say. But you could.
I tend to keep things explicit because I have been doing short fiction, and it's very hard for me to write Necromunda fiction without swearing.
Fair enough. But you could, I mean, in theory, go for that mega leader and still bulk out the squad, because you could go for bullies with one weapon, and can diminish all of the bits off them. So you've
I'm so used to the old way of building gangs, I always forget that they count towards the half of your gang composition now.
Yeah, so you can really, and with the you can pick the deliberately bad gene crafting bits and pieces, lower the cost of them to 20 credits. So even if you do have a 500 point monster, you can still fill your gang up. But and then you upset the person that you're playing, because you've got one super dude, a load of zombies charging up the board, and he's picking out who he wants with a heavy bolter.
That still has a very kind of Goliath feel to me. Like, it's just this really badass guy who surrounds himself with scrubs, and he does that because they're expendable.
Yeah, and I'd love to do that as well, but I think it's just trying to balance it out. I think you have that ability now to make super powerful guys from the start, and then it's just trying to get that balance of not being a dick, essentially, with
right with, you don't want to abuse the gene crafting, certainly.
Yeah,
otherwise your arbitrator might come after you.
I mean, it just gives you so much of fun with this new one.
So in that vein, why don't we get into your 1,000 credit list that you put together?
So, I've just knocked my teeth, my dessert spoon while I've having breakfast this morning.
No worries.
So I've basically made it, I have two options. So basically this is my gang without any VAT building bits and pieces, because I'm not great with remembering 100 different rules and bits and pieces all at once. If three of my guys all have multiple different things, then I really do get kind of stuffed.
I hear that.
So I've just got the Tyrant Leader to start with grenade launcher and renderizer. And again, if this is campaign based, I would be looking to add bits for the future, depending on what gangs people have. And that's why I kind of a lot of the time will go for basically just pick the weapons you want and the war gear comes after, because you can go to the trading post with most of these guys with the war gear. It's just the weapons that you can't go
for
in the future.
Yeah, it's definitely something that I tend to do too, where it's like, you know, there's so many ways to spend credits in terms of war gear. But early on, I find that hitting the minimum number of bodies that you need to function is more important. You can always add those, you know, that's the one nice thing about times when you're like, oh, I only have 20 credits. You can just go to the trading post and grab one of those, you know, grav shoots or whatever that you've been wanting.
Because imagine if you equip everyone with rebreathers, they never get gassed. And then you're like, well, there's no Escher and no one's bringing gas. So you've just spent a load of money on nothing.
It's true.
Oh, you can see through the dark, but no one's the lack and no one's trying to blind anybody. You've just wasted a load of money for nothing. So I'd rather adapt.
No, that's a really good
point.
You
need a weapon, but you don't need the specific things, unless it's armor and stuff, because armor's generally helpful regardless.
Yeah, I tend to pay for armor upgrades. In my list, I did not, but we can go ahead and go through what's your next guy.
Yeah, so I've got the Forge Boss with a grenade launcher as well. I know that with this, it's a lot harder to get. It used to be that you could spam quite a lot with the old Goliath in the 2017, but in this book, it's a bit more difficult because you can only have one specialist with a special weapon, and everyone else has their set weapon. So I thought, if I do want some grenade launchers, I'll put them in a point now where the Forge Boss can use one. He's going to be launching frags. I'm not so fussed about the about missing so much because it can bounce. So, and then because I've never had one, I want a stimmer with paired pulverizers as my third choice.
I think it's just a because, solid choice.
Yeah, and those paired pulverizers are just amazing. Especially, I do love the paired rule. The massive amounts of attacks that you can swing around.
Oh, yeah. This game is in so many ways a numbers game. And so getting extra attacks, like especially doubling your attacks, is just awesome.
Yeah. But again, none of those guys have any drugs or anything as yet. I've then got one specialist ganger who has a grenade launcher also. And then that's all of them. All my grenade launchers, essentially, all three.
Right.
I've got a ganger with a stub cannon with no additional weapon currently, just for shooting until I can get him a close combat weapon.
Mm-hmm.
A ganger with stub gun and spud jacker.
Mm-hmm.
A bully with stub gun and brute cleaver. And two prospects with stub guns and knives. So that gives me 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. And that's for 980 credits. So I had 20 left.
That's a great starting lineup. I mean, I think that if you can hit 8 models with a Goliath gang, you're in good territory. Hitting 9 is impressive.
Yeah, and I was like, okay, so now I can add this, that, and the other, and then I did it all up. I was like, oh, I'm just under 1,000. I think I'll stop here.
Yep.
So my only other option would have been taking out, say, a bully or whatever, and then maybe natborning or giving them some sort of gene splicing for the leader, but that's it. That's the only change I'd make.
What is the background you envision for this gang? Do you have any specific choices you made because of story reasons?
Mine are mainly based on my conversions. mine are literally, I will build most of my gang before I think of anything. So looking at when I made the AOS model and the Immortan Joe model, the fact that that grenade launcher had the hand in a way that I could hold a renderizer also.
Right.
Meant that my leader then had a grenade launcher and a renderizer. Whether that's particularly helpful, because I may spend a lot of the time standing at the back shooting my grenade and not using my renderizer.
Right, exactly.
That's what looked cool on my model, so I went with it.
I like that approach. It's,
yeah.
There's so many cool little bits on the sprues. Sometimes I really just let that guide the process for sure.
Yeah, the only weapon I'm not great with is the rivet cannon, and I've even then, oh no, I've converted it to heavy bolter, that guy, to heavy bolter, but
right.
I've actually got enough, I've got about 20 Goliaths now, so essentially I can just pick and choose now. So, oh, I've got that guy with Grey Nautch, I've got this guy with this, so I just made as many as I could possibly think of,
right,
which then allows me to then just look at my cabinet and go, okay, which of these guys can I add, and I just go from there. So it's my conversions that lead my choices mainly.
That makes sense.
Oh, sense maybe not so much, but that's how it works. Because I end up with maybe not the best weapons choices, or a guy that never gets used. He looks cool and then never gets touched.
Yeah, I've definitely at times made choices about like equipment on a model and then really regretted a combination where I was like, oh wow, this is just... these two don't work together. I think I gave a model for the Escher, I gave them a model the whip that was versatile and the chem thrower. And it was like,
oh, okay,
these two weapons want to both be used at the same, it's like at the same range. So it doesn't make any sense. Like your paired weapons should be filling each other's gaps. So I totally dropped the ball on that. But
I also wouldn't want a twang elastic right next to a gas either. Yeah. Ideally.
But of course, then she died and I lost the match. Oh. So all that gear went to the bottom of the sump anyway.
Oh, painful.
So how many fighters do you try to shoot for when you're working on a Goliath gang? Because I think that number is a little different with Goliath than it is necessarily with other gangs.
Yeah, 100%. I think, well, I always at least try and do 7 if possible,
sure.
Just through habit, even with any gang. But with Goliaths, it's not such a poor thing because with their cool being so good.
Yeah, it's really hard for them to fail a cool test.
Yeah, they're less likely to leg it anyway. So in the end, it's not too bad. But you do want the ability that if they've got maybe 10 people and they're pinning a couple of guys, that you have the ability to actually do something. Because if you take alternative turns, especially if you group activate one time, you then have to spend like half of that whole game turn waiting for someone to just continuously do stuff to you.
Right.
Because you've got no models left.
Yep.
So, and then you can't counter react to anything. So once they've done a couple of lame moves to get you to do your group activation, you've got nothing left. Now they know exactly where you are for a whole turn.
Yeah.
And shoot you, knock you down, coup de grace you and all of those bits and pieces.
That's an interesting thing because I know players who really prefer to get all of their models moved like at the beginning of the turn. And then there's other people who like me are more wanting to kind of long play it where like I'm moving one model at a time while I'm watching them group activate so that I can then make my moves kind of once their position is set for the turn. And it's definitely it's a difference in kind of how you like to interact with the turn structure, but so yeah, it's an interesting kind of it's an interesting kind of thing, because I know in my group a couple of guys were running the skill on the leader that let them activate an additional guy, and
right,
or even getting an icon on top of that so they can activate, you know, 5 guys in one go or whatever. And it's just like, I would like to be able to react on my turn. So I don't want to move everybody all in the first go, but I get the, you know, it's a Vansar player and he's bringing heavy firepower to bear. So from his point of view, he's like, I want to be able to fire 4 or 5 guys in one round. Like, that's my goal.
Yeah. I guess the idea, it's difficult. I see now I'd say the opposite with the Vansar, that I want to take as many Vansar out in one go quickly as possible, because right, then they can't aim because they've got to spend one turn getting off their butt and one turn then shooting in their basic ballistic skill. But at the same time, you can't, you've got nothing to do. The only time I'd want to get all my moves done as quickly as possible is if I smoked like I used to.
Right.
And wanted to go out for a cigarette.
Right.
Be like,
exactly.
Right, I've just busted all my turns out. Right, you just shoot at me now while I go outside.
Yeah, it's definitely, it's a difference in play style. So yeah, I'll never quite understand the way that some people like it, but you know, I've learned to just
Yeah.
Just experience.
Yeah, if you want to, yeah, just I'll tell you how many people I've killed once you come back.
Yeah, exactly. So what are your favorite weapon choices for House Goliath, and what do you tend to avoid?
Well, for the new book now, I still like the renderizer. I like the paired weapons. I love the fact that now it's not just corpse grinders that can rip your face off with 100 attacks.
Yeah, it's true.
I've had three grenade launchers in my list, so I do like those too. I don't really use the heavy bolters too. I mean, the bolters very often, but they are good. I need to actually start putting them in lists and make some Goliaths with them.
Yeah, I think funny that the kit didn't come with any, because I feel like it's a fitting model for them, but not exactly the hardest bit to find.
No, not at all. The thing is, though, that you, with a lot of the other gangs, like same with the Escher and the Van Saar, because they have weapons that are so cheap in a certain way that you know that a lot of their gang are going to end up using them, like the las gun,
right,
or the needle weapon. Because they're so cheap, you know a lot of their gang are going to end up with those weapons. Whereas with the Goliath, there's so many good weapons, but there's no amazingly cheap weapons. So you get that nice spread. You'll have someone with a combat shotgun or a stub cannon and stub guns and stuff like that. But there's none that are so remarkably cheap that the gang ends up with all of them. They've got a good spread of weapons.
It's true. When I've been playing with Goliath, I definitely have found that I find the stub cannon to be a little bit disappointing stock, because it is like it's a solid weapon that just doesn't boost your ballistic skill at all. And every other gun seems to. So it's just like that is such a deficit in terms of helping you hit, which is so important. That, you know, it's worth investing in a scope or something for it, so that you can at least be more likely to hit with it. So that I tend to not avoid those, but I tend to give those guys other guns. I like to do a stub cannon and a stubber with dum-dum rounds as a sidearm, because if they get up close, then they can pull out the stubber and, you know, they're not going to have to worry about missing at, you know, short range.
And it's always good to have a backup weapon anyway, even however reliable your gun is. At some point, it will die out, and your favorite weapon is generally the one that's most likely to have the worst ammo roll anyway.
Exactly. Oh yeah. That's definitely something you got to think about when you're giving guys weapons that will fail on the ammo rolls. That's one of the things that you don't think about with melee weapons being like, they tend to be melee weapons tend to be, you know, investing in them tends to be less advantageous on the battlefield than investing in guns, but you don't have the same risks with the melee weapon as you do with a gun, where you're going to fire it once and you're going to run out of ammo.
Yeah, your knife doesn't snap in half while you're thumping somebody.
Yeah, exactly.
The only other thing that I thought that I would, the only negative one I haven't really used is the rivet cannon. Right. And I think that might have been just from being put off it from when it used to be unwieldy. And I've not really tried it since, but there are just so many other weapons that are 8 inches will murder more face than firing rivets at people.
Yeah, it's a tough one. I like it because I like the model a lot. And I think that it, you know, it's very reminiscent of the, you know, the gang's background and the fact that they're just taking random industrial equipment and using it to torture and kill their enemies. But I definitely feel like it's a drag on my gang when I include it, because it's just like, that's someone who you've already invested a bunch of credits into. So you don't necessarily want to give him, you know, a beefy close combat weapon as well. But then, you know, you're going to get charged, and because you're within charge range if you're firing the renderizer or if you're firing the rivet cannon. So you just wind up in the situation where it's never quite the right choice, but I keep one in my list anyway, because I really like the model a lot.
Yeah, that's why I changed my one into a heavy bolter.
The makes sense.
Just about right, so you can cut the rivet cannon away and just shove the heavy bolter in place.
Right, right.
It fits pretty well. And then there was just a couple of bits that I liked, which of the new adding my brain gene smithing, the dermal right. hardening was always nice. 10 credits for plus one toughness. If yeah, you make that's them,
a good value.
Especially as you'd have to obviously see how much, because toughness 5 Goliaths, all of them just running around like lunatics would be pretty horrible. And Fists of Steel were like my grenade launcher Ford boss, which right. I might give him an extra pistol as backup, but then I won't have to muck about with another hand-to-hand combat weapon because he'll have plus 2 strength and a damage of 2.
That makes a lot of sense, yeah.
Yeah, it just reduces the costs a little bit, that if he just, well, you can come at me, but now he's going to have strength 6 punches with damage 2 each time. Do you want to come and be punched in the face?
Yeah, that's better than most weapons out there.
Yeah, definitely. That was the ones I really like, especially out of the ones I've got.
So when you make a list, do you tend to try for a variety of weapons, or do you like things more regimented?
I will try and do a variety as much as I can. I mean, with that list, the only thing that came out regular was the grenade launcher.
Right.
And I just wanted them to start with knowing that I wouldn't get them in the game. So now I've got them, everyone other than that had a different weapon.
Right.
Stub gun, stub cannon, different hand-to-hand combat weapons. I do want to have a bit of a mix because, one, it's just more interesting. And two, like I say, with the Goliaths, there's no obvious cheap weapon to give all of your scrubs.
Whereas, right, yeah.
So it doesn't matter so much. They've all got a relatively good thing, and they've all, like, the bolt gun is good, but you might run out of ammo. The stub cannon is okay, but you might miss the shot. And they each have their pluses and negatives. I think it's quite a balanced weapons choice.
Yeah, I agree. Moving on to how Goliaths play in a campaign, what do you tend to go for as your first purchase for a gang in a campaign?
Well, I'm not sure if it's just how I do it, but I'll always just be like, well, I need my leader, and I wasn't sure with the new book, obviously, with the Stimmers and the champions being, with the old book, it was just, you want your champions because they went to the base. You want your leader because you need your leader. And then everything else was gump on top. But now you really have to think a lot more. So it was like, well, I want one of these and I want one of these. Okay, now I need. And it's just a really slow process. And it's like, well, I definitely wanted those weapons on those models. So I have to add that from the start. And then it's just dropping bits. I'd always, when I'm doing it, just put, what are the things I definitely want in my list? Put them in first, and then I can wish list my boss after that. Like, I know I want my boss to have the grenade launcher because he comes with it, so he's definitely going to have that.
Right.
So I'll put that in, but I still don't know which gene smithing I'm going to give him, so I'll leave that right to the end because I might not give him any. And so it just basically just depends on what is it you 100% are definitely going to need in your gang. And then just add on top of from that. I needed an amount of bodies, so I needed that many gangers. I needed a bully or some prospects, so I put them in. And if I wanted to definitely use the one with the rock saw, then I was going to have to put that cost in straight away.
Right.
So that's how I generally do my list. I 100% put in the things I definitely need first, and then I just dust everything in after that.
Makes sense. So what would you plan to add for your gang over the course of the campaign?
Well, I'd certainly add more smoke grenades. A lot of them need more backup weapons like pistols.
Right.
And then, like we discussed about the campaigns earlier, depending on who the gangs and things you're playing against, mm-hmm. you can then start tailoring your war gear a little better. So
right.
if you know that you're going to get corpse grinders tearing at you, then you do the smoke and bits and pieces. If you know that the Dalak are going to be attacking you, then you get some more goggles so you can start seeing through their shenanigans. Or if you know that you're going to get shot to death, then you buy more smoke and you put that smoke in grenade launchers and stuff like that. So that's what I would do. And if I'm doing really well, I'll try and get my Zerka in at some point.
Makes sense. Because
he's very expensive, but and I've only ever used a Zerka in one-off games. Once you've decided that the points cost is going to be higher than 1,000, and then you, but yeah, one day I'd love to have the campaign where I've managed to earn enough to get the Zerka in it.
Yeah. Which would be fun. In my most recent campaign, one player bought a Brute and was pulling ahead of the rest of us so quickly in terms of like his credit value that at one point I wound up just giving everyone their house Brute as part of a mission condition. It was just like, well, this will be more interesting if everyone has one of those.
Did they lose their after that?
Well, yeah, so I find that really evened things out a little bit, but it was also like just in general, as the gangs got higher in credit ratings, even though there was still a big gulf, it was just less of a difference in terms of, you know, between a 3,000 credit gang and a 4,000 credit gang. It's not as big, it's not as apparent that there's 1,000 credits difference between you. So, and that also won't even necessarily all show up on the table. So, you know,
that's right.
So it definitely, it helped a little bit. do you prefer more bodies or better gear when you're working with a Goliath gang?
Well, when I start, it would definitely be the bodies than the gear, because there's not really much tailoring of the bodies you can do, really. Like, you need your, apart from the fact that you can buy more gangers or bullies or prospects, none of them are so different that they make a huge difference. So sure. I would always buy my additional weapon bits and pieces afterwards. I wouldn't, because some people will be like, well, I've got to have my leader protected in every way. So he's got to have the goggles. He's got to have a drop rig in case he falls. He's got to have this and that. Right. So that's great. You've got 500 point leader who may not die, but you've covered for every eventuality that you may not ever have. Like, you're in Zone Mortalis in your first round and you've got a drop rig. What are you gonna, what's protecting you there? Like, until you know the lay of the land and the sort of people you're playing, I wouldn't really focus so much on that. I don't know. Some people don't like losing their leaders and bits and pieces. So, I mean, I obviously wouldn't either, because you've got to now make another model.
Right.
Totally different stuff. But some people are just so terrified that they did like some special buck. They've got the undersuit and the oversuit and the carapace armor and all the things. And they've literally just walked out for their first game and they're like, right, I'm ready.
There's an opportunity cost there that they're not necessarily thinking about.
And so hopefully I'd be able to shoot all the other guys. So he's just there at the end on his own. And then he runs away.
How do you approach injuries when your guys get injured? Are you quick to replace the heavily injured, or are you someone who tends to buy bionics?
I think that because the bionics now, they still haven't released the advanced bionics. They've only got the bionics that just basically repair back to
standard
sort of thing. Mine would honestly depend solely on the model.
Makes sense.
If it's my grenade launcher guy or if it's a champion or leader, I'd certainly be keeping them alive. If it's a prospect and I fancy trying to put a bionic arm on them and converting that up, then I'll do that too, just to do it. And if it would make a good story that he's got that bionic arm and now he wants to take his revenge on whoever it was that done it, then I would, even if they gave a negative to it, but it doesn't bother me too much. If someone, if my solely shooting guy now has a BS of like 5+ because he's lost both his eyes or whatever, then I will get rid of that person because they're just no good, especially if they've got skills that are shooting based as well, so they basically just completely negate themselves. There would be a point where I'd just get rid after a while.
Yeah, I mean, you got to cut your losses at a certain point. Yeah. It's not even worth trying to pay for all of those upgrades. Yeah, you're just better off buying a new body.
Yeah, I think it would, on the whole, be a cost effectiveness thing. I'm pretty heartless in regards to my models unless I don't fancy converting them.
Right, right. So which hangers-on do you tend to rely on?
The main hanger-on that I've been using or want to use more often is the new Brute Handler.
Oh, yeah.
Just so I can run the Zerka without running the having to get up card or anything like that. If mm-hmm. it keeps him, if people aren't picking up on the Brute Handler, then he's just keeping the head up of the Zerka, and then they're just running along side by side. And I do quite like my model that I made for the Brute Handler, so I just want to use him for that as well. But just giving them nerves of the Zerka nerves of steel.
Yeah, that's a fantastic swing. Upgrade.
Yeah. And if especially if you, it's not just the Zerka that it works on, it'll work on any, I can't remember the wording, but it's not just the Zerka it works on. I think it's any sort of brute. That's cool. If I had the servitor with the heavy bolter, the H-grade servitor or anything along those lines,
I'm pretty sure.
I'd have to check, but I'm pretty sure it's not solely the Zerka that it works on.
Well, that's really cool. In terms of playing with your list, what's your general plan of engagement?
It would be trying to work out who it is that I... Well, first I would want to pay attention to the mission because I play lots of sort of online games and bits and pieces where you play three versus three, and the amount of times that you lose a game because someone's gone off trying to shoot everybody rather than, you've just got to actually stand here for 10 seconds.
Right.
So at first I try and at least get my head around the mission and work out, do I actually need to stay anywhere for 5 minutes or can I just go around murdering face?
Right,
and then from there I'm like, well, which of my models is better at taking out this thing than this thing? Like, I'm not going to send my hand-to-hand combat guy up against the guy with the heavy, well, with the flamer,
right,
because I know that they're probably not going to get there without having their face melted, so I have to shoot that guy from distance. And with Goliaths it's a bit more difficult because of their pace.
Right.
You can't go up, well, I now need that guy over there, and then get him there quick. Whereas the Escher, you could probably jump a gap and flip off a wall and pass your two up initiative test and stuff like that. And you're like, true, okay, well, now my model's here. But with a Goliath, you really have to think, well, okay, well, he's going to have to go up that set of ladders, and that might take two turns because in one turn of 4-inch movement, he can't get to the top of that ladder, which means you have to stay at the bottom of the ladder. And unless you then start investing in the grapple hooks, I do quite like the look of them because the distance speed that you can get if you're just moving along, that's a real increase. If you can just jump up floors without them expecting it, that will help a lot.
I hadn't considered them for my Goliaths, but now that you mention it, that's a really great idea.
And also, it doesn't ever mention that you have to go up a floor.
Right.
So it's like do the grapple hooks launch, can you launch it forward to get to that barricade over there and drag mm-hmm. yourself across? Because it doesn't mention you have to go up or down.
Oh, no, yeah, I'm envisioning the Luke Skywalker swinging across that gap in A New Hope.
I was thinking more of, what game was it you used to do where you used to be able to launch the grapple hook forward and then just fling yourself at 100 miles an hour at people? But it doesn't even mention about going downwards, so would you need a drop rig if you can grapple hook down onto a floor below you? And I think because not as many people use it, for it to be cheesy, no one really needs to really have put a rule in it. But
right.
I think that it could be used in any sort of way because it's not really that descriptive in how I can shift myself across the room.
Makes sense.
But yeah, basically I'd try and work out who would be trying to take on who and whether I can actually do that task without, say, the Escher running across.
Right.
And so many of the times the mission dictates what I'm going to do, because one of the missions that we were doing recently was where the board was moving along, and I had to try and catch up with my Goliath, so I had to try and catch. Oh no, it was my van. So I had to try and catch up a group of corpse grinders that were legging it off the board that were faster than me. So it was a bit of a nightmare, and it was just like the weird wording that allowed me to keep catching up because a couple of the guys were at the end of the board, which meant they could come on at a board edge, and it was all just crazy. But that was definitely a scenario led game. I couldn't have done that thing any other way. And the fact that, yeah, I think the missions a lot of the time dictate what you're going to have to do.
That's very true. So how do you tend to deal with shooting heavy lists?
AD, I think that would mainly be smoke grenades a lot of the time, hugging cover. I would try and hopefully get at least one shot with a frag grenade. I find a lot of the people that I find that have shooting armies will kind of cluster their shooting next to a leader and then try and get all their shots off in one go. If you're lucky enough to get a grenade shot off that pins a load of those guys, they will shoot back at you, but they won't be able to steady their aim first. They won't be able to move and get a better shot off first, especially if you've pushed them to the sides and bits and pieces, or they've fallen off a gantry or whatever.
Yeah, and if you're getting, you know, grenades over multiple models, the odds of one of them taking an actual injury just goes up every time.
Yeah, and so I'd hope that, because my grenades, I generally don't try to kill a ton of people. It's just trying to keep a group of shooters busy while the other guys are kind of hooning up as quickly as possible.
Yep.
And then the smoke grenades, is because they've got the extra range because of their additional strength and bits and pieces like that, it's just trying to get them up close as destructive as they can be without being pinned continuously along the floor the whole way.
That's definitely the challenge with the Goliaths in particular. Mm. Do you have a strategy for dealing with tough close combat opponents, particularly corpse grinders, or do you just run in terror?
it's difficult because my first bit was just when you did that, I put die, because what you do when you play, because I've only played corpse grinders using Vansar, and even then it was a struggle because with some of the bits and pieces of how they're written, with the guys being able to, because I know that Steve, who was from the Thump City Radio podcast, he was able to double icon, because it doesn't say that whether it uses activation costs or anything like that. So you take your turn to do the act, so you do that twice, they've got that speed, then where they, some of the other rules where they've killed you a certain amount of wounds, now they've got those additional thingies, so you end up with like a 22 inch moving lunatic and you can't get away from them, and with the Goliath's willpower being so low, it's really difficult to actually, it's the willpower, because they've got to pass the willpower test even, and if you fail it, that's your whole turn gone. So you're like, well, I'll try and shoot my grenade launcher for my first action. You fail the roll, that's it, now it's the next person's go. It's like, it can be a little, especially if someone's gone, okay, well, I've got one move, I'm going to charge my guy up as close as I can and then hope that none of you can shoot me, and you shoot four guys at them and they all fail their rolls. It's really disheartening. You're just like, well, what's the point? Like, what's so scary about that mask that means that I'm so terrified I literally do nothing at you, especially with all the horrors that you see in the Underhive the whole time.
Yeah, it's funny that you mentioned that. I feel like Goliaths are like the least likely to see something scary and cower. Like, it's not lining up. The rules aren't lining up there.
And that's the thing that made, so the only thing that I can think to really do is, because a lot of them do, that a lot of the corpse grinder people do where they've got stacks of initiates anyway.
Right.
It's trying to avoid their two champion, because a lot of them don't use the main ganger. I think they're the cutters. I'm not sure, but a lot of them avoid that anyway, so they can have stacks of of initiates that can infiltrate and stuff.
Yeah.
The hope is that if you can kill enough of them, their actual call isn't that great either.
Right.
So hopefully you can bottle them out before they end up murdering your face.
That makes sense.
And that's the only... I would actively, just as much as I can, just feed all of your dead weight to their horrible ones and then try and kill their... Because if they're getting greedy and they've got lots of infiltrators that have got close, then hopefully you can murder their faces before their champions have come in and ripped yours.
The Goliaths are definitely going to beat up the initiates in that gang, because those things, mm-hmm. they're not a particularly well-statted model. So that's a smart call. It kind of reminds me of back in the day in like 4th edition of 40K when I was playing... Necrons, the Satan or Catan or however it's pronounced, was just hellaciously brutal. But if you were smart, you would just try to kill Necron warriors until they phased out. So throw distractions at the Satan, and then you would just try to kill as many warriors as possible. You're just sinking everything into those guys, because no matter what, if you take out enough of the warriors, they lose the game automatically.
I think it's because we've watched too many bad 80s cartoons where the bad guy would be shouting at his troops to come back while they would run away.
Right.
Skeletor screaming at people while they all fly off and stuff. But yeah, I think that's the only thing that I can imagine I can do with corpse grinders, but I haven't had the frustration of playing my Goliaths against corpse grinders as yet, thankfully, but I can imagine I'm going to get frustrated if I guess it's a bit like Blood Bowl, where it's like, the more you keep pushing the thing that's likely to go wrong, it's going to go wrong. So I may have a good shot with my grenade launcher at the leader, but the likelihood is I'm going to fail. So should I leave that entirely to then just try and take out this initiate? Because yes, I have a perfect shot.
Right.
But what's the point if I'm just going to waste my turn failing it?
And no, it's true.
It's a bit painful, but I'd have to but thankfully you have a good call thingy to be able to not shoot the closest model anyway, so.
Right.
And you can, and if I do know I'm fighting corpse grinders for a one-off game, I am just going to beef up a Vat-born lunatic to just take on their leader anyway and just, I've got 5 wounds, 5 toughness. I've got all of the armor that you can have. You can swing all you want.
That's the Goliath approach to finding out that there's a big choppy guy out there. So you can't have a bigger, choppier guy than we can.
So we're going to make
hell you think you're doing.
Yeah, our skin is now so thick that you can't do anything against it.
Probably not very tasty at that point either.
No, exactly. You'd just be like eating beef jerky. But actually, that sounds quite appealing.
These guys are pre-jerks. It's actually less work.
Yeah. Yeah, already like preserved. It'd be great.
All right. Well, I had one last question here. Hmm. We got into it a little bit earlier when we were talking about your gang, but what are some of your favorite sources for conversion bits for Goliath?
So for Goliath, mainly most of my stuff is Chaos Khorne model based.
Right.
So all of my champions and leaders pretty much are either Slaughter Priests or Exalted Deathbringers. But the Skull Grinder looks quite cool as well.
Right.
So basically any of those guys, but also for things like the Prospects as well, the Khorne Bloodbound Reavers, because anyone who's using less armor, they fit perfectly. And I've got loads from where I had an old, Khorne, the old 40K Khorne.
Oh, the Berserkers or whatever?
Well, you had the Bikers and it was...
Oh, right.
I knew it, but I can't remember the name of it. But basically, I've got loads of AOS ones that I was going to use as cultists, but now they've already got the pistol in their hand because they were going to be cultists, so it makes that easier. And because they're bare chested already, they're not going to have any armor to start with, so they fit perfectly.
Yeah, they really are a great one, and not every gang has an obvious choice for, you know, what to use as a juve. Like, Dalak, for example, I straight up don't have any idea other than like the old metals, what to use for a juve. I just made some placeholders for mine.
Completely. No, I've got, and that's pretty much why I haven't done Dalak yet, because there's just no other option that I can see really much either.
Right.
Cordor, thankfully, you always have a group of messy villagers and stuff, and Khorne, that chaos stuff again.
Yep.
You've always got models. The Eshers can be a little more difficult, but you've got Eldar and feminine bodies. And
with the new kits for Warcry, almost every gang has some solid models that can be used for Esher in there. I just did a Corvus Cabal based Esher gang that are like, it's all blue and yellow, like the, you know, the Zinj colors. And so I really love those models a lot. The Corvus Cabal. I definitely recommend the pack of like 18 of them or whatever that they released for Age of Sigmar, because it's just they're really fantastic. You can pull.
I've done the same with the stone golems as well.
Yep.
I've made the stone golems into my pit slaves, and they're going to use the corpse grinder rules. So
I need to get my hands on one of those models. They're really fantastic.
What, the stone golem ones?
Yeah, the golem, yeah.
Yeah, because I've made a whole gang of them now. So I've got the entire pit. I've got a whole corpse grinder army now of pit slaves.
That's fantastic. And yeah,
that big guy is quite cool. But in the end, I had to use a different head because I'd used the head for my Ambot, Cordor Ambot. All of my stuff is just conversions. None of it is standard, really, at all. Not one gang. That's the fun of it. Bad. Yeah, it is.
Ironically, my Goliath gang is the one I've converted the least, because I've used them as a as an intro, like starter gang. So I haven't really had a lot of time to play them in a campaign. I was about to start a campaign and then the entire world fell apart. So we had to put a pause on that.
We've literally just started a campaign. I played my first day. We had two games.
Right.
And then that was the end of it.
I got lucky. The weekend before my wife and I decided it was time to lock down, which was a little ways before the government caught up to us. I had the Apotheosis game for the year long campaign that I'd been running. So I was really glad to get that done before all of this, instead of having this thing that I've been planning for a year, like have to be delayed an indefinite amount of time.
Yeah, I'd have been upset if I'd spent ages sorting out a campaign for it all just to fall apart.
Yeah, exactly. So
the only other things that were separate from that was the only other GW one was Orc Knob weapon bits.
Oh, that's a good idea.
For all of the chain weapons, the guns are slightly bigger, so it doesn't look so weedy in the hand of a Goliath because they're that much bigger.
That makes sense.
And also Hungry Troll, which is a separate third-party company. Mm-hmm. I've got their Nuke Wars models. There's five characters, and they all fit either they're actually going to be my Stimmers. One of them is one that's actually holding a grenade launcher, which is going to be my champion. So they're basically ever so slightly bigger than the Goliath, but that then means that they kind of are the right size for your leaders or champions. So they're
exactly
Mode Max, Mad Max theme. They've got Mohicans, stuff like that. And they Hungry Troll make quite a lot of Blood Bowl stuff as well. So,
awesome.
But yeah, so they're the only other basically different thing. And my Sump Croc is two squigs instead of a Sump Croc itself. But it uses the same size base in this.
Right.
So there's Sump and Croc, and they're my Sump. But yeah, so basically enough, apart from the actual gangers themselves, barely any of it's actually the actual gang that came in the box.
Yeah, I feel you. I do that with pretty much everything. I just got done kit bashing a box of Skitarii and a set of the Night Haunt guys.
Nice.
So I'm pretty much always looking for the wrong way to build the the newest stuff.
And end up thinking I'm going to end up saving money or whatever because this thing's too expensive. And I always end up spending way more making a conversion than I would have done buying the model.
I try not to ever think about price tags with this stuff. It's just like, all right, like I'm going to buy one or two kits a month. And sometimes that one kit is going to go into like four different random projects.
Yeah.
And we're just not going to think about how much, if you amortize those costs, I don't want to think about that.
Like, no. I've got a very nice bits drawer. I've got two sets of bits drawers that I've set up and pasta carded them all. So I've got the legs for Space Marines, the bolt guns for Space Marines, the blah, blah, blah for Space Marines. So I've got all of that all cut up with all the bits.
Right.
But the only thing I find difficult is the Necromunda ones because they're so, this has to go into this.
Yeah.
You then end up having to leave them on sprues a lot more.
Either that or you wind up kit bashing it where it's like you're cutting wrists and you're cutting elbows. Yeah,
shoulders and it's a nightmare.
Yep.
And especially with thin arm gangs as well, it can be a right pig.
Oh, yeah.
Keep everything in place.
There's some real finicky connections on some of the kits. I've definitely, yeah. It's gotten to the point where when I get a gang, the first thing I do is just build the 10 bodies and just set them aside. Because if I don't, I'm going to wind up trying to put them together after I've clipped them off the sprue later, and they're going to wind up, I'm going to be matching the wrong legs with the wrong body. I'm going to have to clean stuff over it, and it's going to be a headache.
That's why I keep the bits of, with the Necromunda drawers, they've just got the sprues and the building instructions still together because I just don't, I haven't got the bottle to start. Because if I cut them off and I'm like, was that 26 or was that 25?
Yep.
You just, madness. So I'd leave them on the sprues, but then you forget some of the cool bits that are on there, which is annoying.
Yeah, it's definitely, it's a balancing act with converting the Necromunda kits.
It's definitely worth it though.
Oh, I agree. All right, well, thank you very much for coming on the show.
Thank you very much for having me.
If you are interested in doing a shout out for anyone, go right ahead.
The only people that I can think of would be, I know that we do it on our Facebook. So if you want to join a group on Facebook, you can come join us on Chronicles from the Underhive. I forgot that for a second.
Oh, yeah.
But thankfully, there's obviously Dome Runner Podcast and Sump City Radio as well for if you... if you're wanting Necromunda podcast, because like I say, I'm really glad that people joined in and took over once we stopped. So
yeah, I gotta say, I really love the Sump City Radio Facebook group. I don't think I've mentioned them on the show before, but there's a lot of Facebook groups about Necromunda, and we all kind of post in all of them. But I really have enjoyed the community that's kind of popped up there over the course of the last, 6 months or whatever. It's a great group of people. I feel like it's a little more self-selecting than the bigger groups.
Yeah, 100%. And I think thankfully, because our group was always very calm and hopefully not, I never found anyone to be insulting in that group.
Right.
And I think a lot of people kind of migrated from one to the other, which is kind of made sure that a lot of the time, I think once moderators allow something to start happening, then that gives permission for everyone to carry on doing the same. So as long as you've got the admins catching them out saying, no, that's not going to be acceptable, that's not constructive criticism. Like screaming at someone to drill their barrels is not constructive.
Yeah.
I think once you get an idea of what sort of group it is and what you can and can't get away with, a lot of the time people do generally play ball.
I think it's an underappreciated thing that was going on with online communities all the time. Like moderation has always been pretty crucial to how forums operate and how, image boards operate. But I think that it was less apparent to people than it is now with, Facebook admins. So people get kind of entitled about it, but like, it's always been crucial to have a referee who can step in and say, this isn't productive. This isn't helping. Like go, everybody take a time out. But people can get a little sensitive about it at times.
100%. And the fascination of people trying to change someone else's mind always mystifies me on Facebook.
Yeah.
That person's had that view their whole life. They're not going to have it changed by your 500 character rant on Facebook through their, they're just going to give you another answer back. Like, why are you two having this debate? No one's going to gain anything from it. No one's going to go, you know what? You were right. I'm going to change my entire lifestyle.
It's a Sisyphean kind of thing.
Yeah, it's just like shouting down an empty hallway. It's an entirely pointless task.
Yep.
But yeah, thankfully the groups are pretty cool. We don't have any of that. do you have a direct Facebook group as well? Or is it
I don't really want to deal with the mental energy of moderating.
I don't blame you. Yeah. In all honesty.
Yeah, so I've been running my page, which I post photos to, and I post, I sometimes do live painting videos and stuff, but it's definitely more of a me having a platform where everything can be collected at the moment kind of thing. Because I've been doing hobby projects for ages, but the only place I've really been consistent about keeping a record of it, because I'm not good about blogging, is on Twitter. But I don't know how much you've used Twitter, but Twitter is like,
I've never used Twitter.
You can't go back and like look at what you posted last year, like in January on Twitter. Okay. Like you have to manually scroll through every single thing you've ever posted. So it's not a convenient way to be like, oh, people will be like, oh, what's the board project that you worked on? And I'm like, oh, well, I could scroll through like 3 months of tweets and find you that if you want to take a look at it. So I've decided to start using my Facebook page to keep track of stuff. Because at least that is a little easier to manage.
And search.
Oh, exactly. No, that's cool.
I mean, I'm just really happy I've been able to do a podcast again, because it has been quite a while since I've done any sort of recording, and I just didn't want to talk to myself.
Thanks so much for coming on. I really appreciate it. I'm glad to get you back in the saddle.
And I'm glad you wrote up such an early time in your time to be able to make it possible to be morning for me.
All right, man. Talk to you soon.
And you, yeah, have a good one.
Wake up, Hiver. Aren't mornings the worst? Waking up in a puddle of your own sick, finding your clothes, and having to sprint through dangerous tunnels to get to the Factoria for an 18-hour shift. Start your day right with a stop into Sumpin' Donuts for a bite of tasty fried corpse starch dough and a hot recaf. It'll keep you alert while you work, guaranteed. Sumpin' Donuts. Hive Primus runs on Sumpin'.
And that is going to do it for episode 10 of the Dome Runners. Thanks once again to Purple Planet at purpleplanet.com for the show's theme song. And don't forget to like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. And if you could take a moment to give us a rating on your preferred podcast platform, it's always appreciated. And remember, when in doubt, always check the sump.